Today is Tuesday, November the 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Bunganya in Washington. Coming up, a U.S. federal judge ruled late Monday that former White House counsel Don McGahn must comply with the House subpoena for his testimony in the Trump impeachment inquiry.
So even though the judge did rule that McGahn has to testify, it already has gone to an appeals court.
And China's government responded to the Hong Kong elections by emphasizing that the city will always be ruled from Beijing. It's all on today's International Edition. A U.S. federal judge has ruled that President Donald Trump's former White House counsel Don McGahn must testify to the House of Representatives in its impeachment probe. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote that, quote, presidents are not kings, and said that the president, quote, does not have the power to excuse McGahn or any other current and former White House officials from testifying before Congress. AP's Sega Megani has more.
A federal judge says former White House counsel Don McGahn must comply with a subpoena to appear before Congress. It's a setback to President Trump's efforts to keep top aides from testifying before lawmakers. The judge writes presidents are not kings and do not have the power to excuse aides from complying with a valid congressional subpoena. His lawyer says McGahn will comply unless a court stays the ruling, which the White House says it will appeal. It's argued in the past McGahn and other top officials have absolute immunity from testifying. The judge says no such immunity exists. McGahn was a star witness in the Mueller probe, and Democrats wanted to talk with him about potential obstruction of justice by the president. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
Mr. McGahn, who was White House counsel until he resigned in a year ago, was named in the former special counsel Robert Mueller's report on suspected collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. For more on what this ruling means, I'm joined by VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. Catherine, a federal judge decided yesterday that President Donald Trump's former White House counsel, Don McGahn, must testify to the House of Representatives in its impeachment inquiry or probe. Now, some analysts have said that this ruling was a clear denunciation. Others have called it a rebuke of the executive branch's claim that it has absolute power. The judge's language was pretty strong, right?
It most certainly was. One line that really stood out to me from this judge and her ruling is where she said that the chief theme of American history of the past 250 years is that our presidents are not kings and that their aides do not owe their loyalty to the president the way they would to a king. They owe their loyalty to the U.S. Constitution and to the country itself, and that helped guide her as she made this decision.
So what does this mean now? Does this mean that Don McGahn is going to appear before Congress? Is there an appeal process to this? And is this likely to end in the Supreme Court?
Here's where it gets a little bit trickier. So even though the judge did rule that McGahn has to testify, it already has gone to an appeals court here in the United States. I would expect the administration to keep fighting it as we go through this process. We also know that House Democrats have already said that they are not going to wait for the president to drag this whole issue out in the courts. They are moving forward with impeachment. And of course, here's the other issue. This Don McGahn ruling is related to the Mueller report. What we're investigating now in the U.S. House of Representatives related to impeachment is the Trump-Ukraine issue, the Trump-Ukraine scandal. Right. So they're actually two separate issues. Democrats are not going to want to wait for this to slow down in the courts through the appeals process.
But is there anything in Don McGahn's testimony that would further advance their case for impeachment?
It would possibly help build a background of corruption and obstruction of justice. You know, Adam Schiff, who's the House Intelligence Committee chairman, has talked about obstruction of justice as a possible article of impeachment that House members could vote on. But I'm not seeing the possibility that he could come before Congress soon enough for that to be a possibility. What it does do is push other members of the administration who have failed to answer subpoenas in the Trump-Ukraine impeachment issue.
But what are the wider implications of this ruling? Aside from Don McGahn, who else does this ruling affect?
Well, it could certainly impact Mick Mulvaney, other national security White House aides who have failed to answer subpoenas at the direct orders of President Trump. This reinforces House Democrats' case that nobody is above the law and that the legislative branch of the United States does have a mandate to investigate and hold the executive branch accountable.
And like you said yesterday, regardless of any additional testimonies, the committees seem to be at this point, they have enough to draw up impeachment articles of impeachment.
We're close. So House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff sent out a letter yesterday saying that his committee is working on that report right now and that they expect that report to come out soon after Thanksgiving. What happens then is that the report goes to the House Judiciary Committee, who traditionally writes up articles of impeachment. We expect that process to be quite quick, and for articles of impeachment to come up for a House floor vote by the end of December before lawmakers leave for their holiday break.
Catherine Gibson, thank you very much for speaking to us today.
You're so welcome.
That was VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. Donald Trump faces a process that could end with his removal as president of the United States. Impeachment hearings underway now in the House of Representatives are just part of the start of what is prescribed in the U.S. Constitution. In today's installment of American Impeachment, VOA's Steve Reddish has an overview of what is taking place.
Impeachment. The word has been around since mid-16th century England. It means to challenge credibility or validity. Impeachment is mentioned six times in the U.S. Constitution, but the document does not specify how it is to be carried out. Article 1 of the Constitution gives the House of Representatives, the lower but larger of the two chambers of Congress, the sole power of impeachment. The House investigates and then drafts articles of impeachment. A simple majority vote of the now 435 members is required to impeach. Impeachment does not automatically mean removal from office. Once the House approves articles of impeachment, the upper chamber of Congress, the Senate, holds a trial. From the U.S. Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the United States presides over that trial. Two-thirds of the 100 senators are needed to vote to convict and remove from office.
Removing the President of the United States before an election is a drastic thing, and the Constitution does not want it to happen often. So they put in a very high bar, the two-thirds, 67, and yes, it would have to be both parties.
Article 2 of the Constitution sets out the criteria and punishment: removal from office on impeachment and conviction for treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. 14 U.S. judges and one justice have been impeached. 9 were convicted and removed. 4 U.S. presidents have faced an impeachment inquiry by the House. 2 were impeached, none were convicted. Andrew Johnson was impeached in 1868 for firing the Secretary of War over the objections of the Senate amid repeated clashes over civil rights for newly freed African American slaves. More than 100 years after Johnson's impeachment in 1974, Richard Nixon resigned before an impeachment vote could take place in connection with a break-in at Democratic Party headquarters and the subsequent cover-up of the crime. Bill Clinton was impeached in 1998 for lying under oath about a sexual affair with an intern. And now Donald Trump is facing an impeachment inquiry in the Democratic-controlled House for soliciting a foreign government to investigate a political rival. Impeachment hearings are underway, with a vote likely before the end of the year. Steve Reddish, VOA News.
You're listening to Voice of America. This is the International Edition. My name is Jackson Bunganyi. A strong earthquake struck the area of Albania's capital early Tuesday, killing at least six people and injuring hundreds. The U.S. Geological Survey said the epicenter of the 6.4 magnitude quake was the northwest of the capital, Tirana. And Pakistan's highest court has temporarily suspended the government notification that allowed the country's powerful military chief to serve another full three-year term. Tuesday's unprecedented move by the Supreme Court came several months after Prime Minister Imran Khan issued the extension order for the Chief of Army Staff General Qamar Javed Bajwa, who is due to retire later this month. And Pope Francis today closed his visit to Japan by telling students at a Catholic university of the need to work toward a hopeful, filled future and create a more humane, compassionate, and merciful society. And also, WHO evacuates nearly 50 staff from Ebola team in the Congo due to insecurity. For expanded coverage of these stories and more, visit the website voanews.com. You can also download our VOA mobile app on your phone or mobile devices. This is International Edition. China's government has responded to the Hong Kong elections by emphasizing that the city will always be ruled from Beijing and warning further protest violence. A week-long police siege of a university in Hong Kong may be winding down, closing one of the more violent chapters in the city's long-running anti-government protests. Dr. Carla Freeman, an associate professor of Chinese studies at Johns Hopkins University, talks with International Edition's Kate Pound-Dawson about China's reaction.
The general impression that I have is that Beijing was caught by surprise by the not only the turnout, but the real almost complete reversal of the last, I guess it was a 2015 election, where you have now districts overwhelmingly controlled by pro-democracy candidates. So Beijing is figuring out how to deal with this. And what we've seen so far is a fairly muted public response by Beijing to the election results. The line that Beijing seems to be taking so far is to the one that it has used consistently in international fora about the Hong Kong situation, which is to warn against interference in Hong Kong's affairs. And we had a statement by Foreign Minister Wang Yi, for example, emphasizing that point, and also making very clear that Beijing would tolerate no moves toward independence from Hong Kong. As far as I know, that was not on the table as far as these elections went. So my sense is that Beijing is figuring out how to respond.
Now, one of the big issues for the protesters has been the removal of Carrie Lam, who's the chief executive of the special administrative region. Is that likely to happen now?
Well, since October, we've been hearing rumblings that Carrie Lam's removal could be by Beijing could be imminent. I think Beijing would like to use Carrie Lam until the absolute end of her utility to Beijing. But certainly this was essentially a referendum on the lack of support by Hong Kong voters on Carrie Lam's leadership. So I think Carrie Lam herself has said she would be willing to resign. I think we will see some move to remove her. When that happens is unclear. I think, again, Beijing is figuring out its strategy.
Now, also, we have in this mix the U.S. legislation that passed last week, the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, which is aimed at China. It implies a threat of sanctions or other action by the U.S. if things take a very bad turn for the worse in Hong Kong. How is China responding to that, and how does that play into all of this?
The United States, of course, has had the U.S. Hong Kong Policy Act in place since 1992 that related to the U.S. ability to continue to treat Hong Kong as an economy separate and apart from mainland China. But this new act adds some additional tools and allows the U.S. government to impose sanctions on individuals who are found to violate human rights in Hong Kong. So as far as Beijing's reaction to that, Beijing will undoubtedly use it to reinforce its view that that outside forces are interfering in Hong Kong's internal affairs. The other question is how this will play given the ongoing trade negotiations between the U.S. and China. And currently, and at least as far as I've read so far, the president President Trump has not signed this bill, which would be required to turn it into law, and has not yet indicated whether he will sign it or not. So this, in his view, in fact, in President Trump's view, as he stated, the ongoing trade negotiations with Beijing have actually been a restraint on Beijing's use of force in Hong Kong. So again, unclear what will happen. I think the president will be under considerable legislative pressure from American legislators to sign the bill, but he has said he doesn't want it to disrupt the trade negotiations.
That was Dr. Carla Freeman, an associate professor of Chinese studies at the Johns Hopkins University. She was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. This is VOA's International Edition. Britain's royal family is facing its biggest crisis since the 1990s, a decade marked by divorce and the death of Princess Diana, according to many royal observers. Prince Andrew, the second son of Queen Elizabeth, announced that he is stepping back from public duties following a sharp backlash against a recent television interview. The prince was asked about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein, a U.S. financier and convicted sex offender, who killed himself in jail in August. Meanwhile, Prince Harry and his wife, Meghan Markle, have also stepped back from public life after struggling with press intrusion. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Riding out in the grounds of Windsor Castle, Prince Andrew was recently spotted for the first time since announcing he was stepping back from public duties. That followed a public backlash from this interview, in which the prince was asked about his friendship with the American convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein and why he had stayed at Epstein's house after his conviction.
I had to go and see him and talk to him.
Prince Andrew's lack of compassion for Epstein's victims was shocking, says royal analyst Richard Fitzwilliams.
What it showed was someone completely out of touch with his audience and, in my opinion, with reality. He had to step back from his royal duties. He had basically become toxic.
One of Epstein's alleged trafficking victims claims she was forced to have sex with the prince once when she was 17. Andrew has repeatedly denied the accusations and said he is willing to give evidence to US investigators. Andrew has caused royal embarrassment in the past, says Fitzwilliams.
His marriage to Sarah Ferguson, she proved a disaster as a member of the royal family and has been responsible for numerous embarrassments.
From a prince seen as abusing royal privilege to another struggling with the scrutiny it brings. Prince Harry and his wife Meghan Markle have spoken of their dismay at press intrusion and are taking legal action against several newspapers.
They simply have to accept that there is going to be a certain amount of cooperation with the press and global interest in everything they do because of who they are.
There was more unwelcome scrutiny when the Duke of Edinburgh, the Queen's husband, was involved in a car accident in January. The royals were drawn into the Brexit crisis in September when the Supreme Court ruled that Prime Minister Boris Johnson had misled the Queen when he asked her to suspend Parliament.
This has been a dreadful year for the monarchy, the worst since the 1990s. But there's absolutely no reason to believe that that will go on into next year if the royals get a grip with their advisers and their press officers, and also if Harry and Meghan can be persuaded that there is a course that will make them happy as members of the royal family.
The Queen will try to draw a line under a difficult year when she gives her televised Christmas Day speech, an event closely watched by many in Britain. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A new UN report is raising the alarm on the need for more action to combat climate change. The report is calling for rapid and transformational change to limit global warming. Steve Baragona is a VOA's climate correspondent, and he spoke with International Edition's Kit Pound-Dawson about the report.
So this is the new emissions gap report for 2019. This looks at the difference between what countries say they're going to do, what they're actually doing, and what needs to be done to keep the planet from overheating. And what they found this time is that we are far off track, which is probably not a huge surprise, but it kind of puts some numbers on it. It says basically at the current pace, so in Paris, the negotiators aim to keep the planet from warming more than 2 degrees over pre-industrial levels. That's going back to 1850 or so. The planet has already warmed about 1 degree, and we've seen increased storms, increased droughts, rising seas, increased heat waves. And what they're saying here is that the on the current trajectory, we're looking at 3.4 to 3.9 degrees of temperature rise, so way beyond that 2 degree threshold.
Now, we're heading into the climate summit in a couple of weeks in Madrid. How is this report going to factor into the discussions there?
Well, the whole point of the Paris Accord, going back to 2015, was that we start with kind of an initial attempt to rein in emissions, recognizing at that point, the negotiators recognized that that was not going to be enough to bring emissions to the point that to keep the planet from overheating. And the intention was always to increase ambition periodically. And so this is going to be one of those tests to see if people are willing to increase their ambition. And this report is kind of, you know, a bit of a poke in the side to say, no, really, seriously, we need to be doing something about this.
What are scientists saying can be done or should be done in the next few years to hit some of these targets? What things need to be on government agendas?
Well, the good news here is that there's actually a lot that can be done. Solar power, wind power, batteries, all the kind of key renewable technologies have come down in price to the point where they are competitive and sometimes cheaper than the sources of power that most people are using, coal, natural gas, things like that. So the tools are there in many cases. It's just what's lacking is the political will. There's a lot that can be done to restore land that will absorb CO2 out of the atmosphere. There's a lot more research that can and is being done about removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere with things like direct air capture or capturing it from power plants. So, you know, what they're saying is that basically the tools exist. Get to it. We've got, they say, about 10 years before we blow what's called the carbon budget. This is the amount of CO2 that can be put into the atmosphere before the planet will, you know, overheat, will go past that 1.5 degree threshold. Now, that's not to say that at the end of 10 years, the planet will immediately tip over this point. This is kind of a gradual process, and it's like getting a sunburn. You know, you get your sunburn now, but you don't feel it for, you know, until you go home at night. It's the same way with climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. You emit the gases now, but the consequences don't really kick in for several years. What they're saying is that we've got about 10 years before we can blow past that budget. The consequences will take a few more years, but they're saying let's stop before we get to that point.
You're listening to International Vision. This is VOA.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Russia has introduced a new hypersonic weapon. It says it will be ready for combat You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Our producer has been Nadia Taha, our engineer Nashwan Kali. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Enjoy the day.